Hi, this is Sue. It's April 2nd, 2023. And before we go back to the peak book for today in this class, I'm going to read to you about the foreign exchange market, which is very important for understanding what peak is talking about. Go to YouTube. Search for the following. Lecture 29, IIT space R-O-O-R-K-E-E. Click on Lecture 29, Foreign Exchange, Foreign Exchange Market, Features, Participants. I'm going to read you part of what this professor from an Indian university was teaching his class. It starts at 9 minutes 42. I'm going to talk using his language. Okay. So what are the features of this foreign exchange market? First of all, you have to understand this market is a 24-hour market. I have mentioned it. Let us see. The foreign exchange market is a global network of who? Who are the members? The banks, the brokers, the foreign exchange dealers, all connected. Even you know, the individual retailers also. The individuals also by electronic communication systems. So these people, the banks, the brokers, the banks could be the commercial banks, the central banks of a country. So the brokers may be the one you know, the fund agencies and others, the foreign exchange dealers and the corporations. So basically what it says, it is a global network of banks, brokers, and foreign exchange dealers connected by a communication system. So, for example, the popular ones are like J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Citi, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, Deutsche Bank, Standard Chartered. These are some of the names of the most involved or the most popular participants in this global exchange market. So these people have a big role. And in the transaction, in the entire transaction system, the foreign exchange market functions 24 hours a day in different time zones, according to the different time zones of the globe. So that means it is one market which never takes a rest. So, as you can also see, you must have heard the Citibank's punchline, which says, a bank which never sleeps, Citibank. So no wonder they are correct, because when they work for 24 hours, there is no time to sleep. If exchange rates quoted in different markets were not essentially the same. There would be an opportunity for arbitrage. What is arbitrage? Very, very simple, you know, to understand, but it has a very high impact. It is the process of buying a currency low and selling it high. Now, let us take two different markets, A and B, right? We take two markets. Now, if the dollar price of the euro is 90.99 in New York and $1.01 in Frankfurt, let us say, this would help the arbitrager. He could buy or purchase the euros at 99.99 here and in New York, and immediately resell them in Frankfurt for 1.01, thus realizing profit. So this phenomenon of buying at the same time, maybe at a lesser price, and selling the same item at another market at a higher price is called arbitrage. Arbitrage is taking advantage of the difference of the value in two different markets. So, the variety of factors that affect exchange rates are like the inflation rate, interest rate, money supply, etc. So these factors affect the exchange rate basically. So if you look at the market share of the leading foreign exchange currency in 2019, by value of turnover, you will get an understanding that no wonder the US dollar leads the race. And it is the highest market share. It is about 88%, followed by the euro, 32%, yen, 17%, British pound, 13%. Australian dollar, 7%. It goes in a hierarchy. The last around, you know, the Mexican peso is around 2%. What it says is basically, if you have to understand here that the euro and the U.S. dollar, the yen and the pound, these four, they are leading from the front, right? They have the highest market share. In terms of global liquidity and all over the place, by far the most utilized currency is the US dollar, known widely as the world's reserve currency. Every country on the planet keeps large sums of dollars in reserve. To make hard currency trades on major commodities like oil, gas, grain, and gold. Which are the commodities, basically. This advantage is what gives Washington unprecedented power and leverage in international affairs. Most transactions involve U.S. dollars on one side The U.S. dollar is a vehicle currency. What it says basically, if you look at the amount of use of the U.S. dollar, many people, many critics, economists, they feel that the entire politics behind keeping the dollar as a number one currency It's a large politics behind it. Many countries are trying to dismantle the U.S. dollar, but the U.S. has its own interest. So it works very hard to keep the U.S. dollar at the top. If the U.S. dollar would not be the most used currency, automatically its business would come down, its importance would fall. So many countries would not even then use the U.S. dollar for doing their business. That means the U.S. dollar's importance, if it once comes down, the U.S. economy will be greatly affected. So if you look at the countries like Iran, and all they want the U.S. dollar to come down. But on the other hand, the U.S. government works very hard. There is a lot, you know, of shadow wars and other things that happen. In order to keep the U.S. dollar at the top. The U.S. dollar is a vehicle currency. Vehicle currency means it is used for most or most of the transactions. The Bretton Woods Agreement established that the central banks would maintain fixed exchange rates between their currencies and the dollar. That means the dollar is such a powerful currency that almost all the countries have to keep some amount of reserves in the form of the dollar. Because almost all the transactions that you do across the world, all international, largely done through the dollar. When you come to the participants in the foreign exchange market, when you talk about them, the banks, for example, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citi, etc., there are large corporations, multinational corporations. Who are basically doing the business. Somebody wants to buy or import something, you know, even export cars. Or something, whatever, the large corporations are there. Individuals are also there, but they hold a very small value, very, very small. There are central banks, like we have our RBI in India. Every country has a central bank which basically controls the money supply in that particular nation. Then you have the hedge funds, investment funds, right? So there are large agencies again. There are very popular hedge funds, fund agencies. And these fund agencies, they basically work to improve their portfolios. And these fund agencies also are basically working there on their portfolios, and there are Forex companies. These are some of the members. The participants in the foreign exchange market, or the Forex, F-O-R-E-X. Let us see each one of them and try to understand. The first comes the commercial banks. In fact, if you will be interested to know that 90% of the transactions, 90% of the transactions in the Forex or foreign exchange market are due to the interbank transactions. The rest, you can say all the rest of the participants will be between the banks. And themselves, like companies, corporations, etc. So this interbank is basically the largest and most significant amount of the transaction. That is happening here. What are commercial banks? These banks serve their retail clients, the bank customers, in conducting foreign commerce. Or making international investment in financial assets that require foreign exchange. So, the commercial banks are those banks who help their customers in conducting foreign exchange or making international investments. So these banks are one, they are the largest among the biggest players, the most important participants in the Forex market. Others are members like foreign exchange brokers, central banks, multinational corporations, individuals, and fund managers. When you say brokers, they operate in the international currency market and act as agents who facilitate trading between the dealers. Unlike the banks, these brokers are mainly matchmakers and do not put or create their own money. What are these people basically doing? Responsible for disseminating the information regarding the value of the currencies. Right? We're going to end here, and I'm going to go to do a little more of a deep dive into the role of the central banks in this foreign exchange market. We've learned 90 plus transactions in this market are done between commercial banks who create the currencies for their countries. but is the central banks of each country that control their commercial banks. So I'm going to read to you from a book. This is a little bit of the history of the central banks and what they do in the foreign exchange markets. This is from a book, The Arena of International Finance, published in 1976 by Charles A. Coombs, C-O-O-M-B-S. He retired a year before the book was published from the New York Fed as a senior vice president, having had a career of 30 years with the New York Fed. He had his first role was directing the New York Fed's foreign exchange operations. And then for 16 years, he was a special manager of the Open Market Committee of the Fed system. And I'm just going to read from his chapter 5 called The Federal Reserve Swap Network. It's a little bit of the history that helps. From 1951 to 1970, William McChesney Martin was chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. In 1961, Martin decided the Federal Reserve should assume a major international role. As the money-creating authority, the Fed could rise to almost any financial emergency, whereas the Treasury was confined to the existing $330 million resources of its stabilization fund. The board staff and the New York Federal began to work together on international matters. The Treasury retained the right to veto any projected market operation of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve retained a similar right to refuse to undertake with its own funds that it creates out of thin air any financial operation it disapproved, even if formally requested to do so by the U.S. Treasury. In the Open Market Committee, approved on February 13, 1962, the undertaking of market operations in foreign currencies. As an initial base of operations, we immediately bought from the Treasury some 30 million of the stronger foreign currencies and opened accounts with a number of European central banks. Buying Swiss francs for dollars, for example, would have correspondingly enlarged the Swiss National Bank's holdings of dollars convertible at that time into gold. The European central banks held only dollars in their foreign exchange reserves. In the exchange markets, transfers from marks to French francs meant 1. Sell marks for dollars. 2. Convert dollars to francs. A swap is, for example, to credit French francs to a federal account in Paris against dollars to a French account in New York. At the end of 3 months, reverse the transaction at the same rate, a forward contract to reverse the transaction, in other words. As the central banks endowed with the privilege of creating money, the Federal Reserve and the Bank of France thus produced out of thin air on March 1, 1962, an increase of $100 million of international reserves by the simple process of a Federal Reserve payment of $50 million to the Bank of France account at the New York Federal against an equivalent payment of French francs by the Bank of France to the account of the New York Federal in Paris. But the essence of the transaction was a 90-day loan by the Bank of France of $50 million equivalent of French francs to the New York Federal. The Federal could either spend the French francs in the exchange markets to resist selling pressure on the dollar exchange rate, or use them to buy up surplus and gold convertible dollars on the books of the Bank of France. Meanwhile, the Bank of France would hold an IOU from the New York Federal in the form of a $50 million credit sold forward against French francs, on which it would collect interest at the U.S. Treasury 90-day bill rate. By thus incurring a debt in French francs, the Federal would become exposed to a risk of a revaluation of the French franc. But the Bank of France undertook to safeguard the Federal against this eventuality by accepting a standing order to sell on the eve of any French revaluation, whatever French francs the Federal needed to cover its debt against payment by the Federal in dollars. On the other hand, if the Federal did not have occasion to disperse the French franc proceeds of the swap, the Federal would earn a precisely offsetting interest return on its French franc balance. In effect, the swap credit costs the United States interest charges only when and to the extent it was used. This is a note. The swap was not found in federal law. Quote, it yielded precisely the same results as a direct borrowing from a foreign central bank. End quote. This set the pattern for a spreading network of similar reciprocal lines of credit between the federal and other major foreign central banks. Quote, looks suspiciously like an attempt to divide means of blocking access to the Treasury gold window. This was not too far from the mark. And I'll end there. These swap arrangements are still active now, even after Nixon closed the gold window in 1971. Now we're going to the Peak Book. I'm going to read the first paragraph of today's lesson in the Peak Book, and then we'll go to Randy's reading it. Page 222. Why Quit Our Own by George N. Peek, P-E-E-K. The last paragraph at the bottom of page 222. During this whole period, that is 1896 to 1933, the country was short of capital, and the current notion was that we were progressing too fast to accumulate any capital. The fact is now revealed that, because we did not know the state of our accounts, we permitted our immigrants to send out a considerable portion of what should have been our national savings, and we had to borrow from Europe what we should have been able to borrow at home. We closed the period $1 billion more in debt to Europe than at the beginning. That is, our people freely presented $6 billion to the world and then were compelled to borrow $1 billion of it back at interest. The net result of our foreign trade was to provide foreigners with money to lend to us. We were in the nature of a colony. Continued on the next tape by Randy Cook.